Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief for the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films, Hotel by the River, Reuben Brandt Collector, and Everybody Knows. And again, it's a total meatball for titles, so I'm just going to say, over to you, CB.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Yeah, so soon everybody will know a little bit more maybe about these three films, which our theme for today is three movies which have virtually nothing in common with each other, except that we do have actually quite an international flavor today. I'd like to start out by saying some things about Hotel by the River. And by the way, just as a little prefatory note here, it is nice that so many movies from overseas do seem to get at least some sort of theatrical release in America. These movies will also be available if they aren't already, you know, on various streaming platforms and stuff. But it is true that despite the dominance of the Hollywood blockbusters, a certain number of overseas movies, and even pretty adventurous ones, do manage to get theatrical releases in America, even if they're not, as I often say, playing at every multiplex. Hotel by the River is a movie from South Korea, written and directed by a very major South Korean director, Hong Sang-soo, and it is, as is his wont when he makes movies, it is a quiet movie, a fairly small movie, but a movie which I really found pretty engrossing. It's not a masterpiece, but I really did feel very much caught up in it while I was watching it. It's almost a kind of a, what they used to call a chamber drama, a very small-scale movie which takes place mostly in the titular hotel by the river, and has just a handful of characters, really, and even a smaller number of characters who really matter a lot. And the main characters, one is a poet. And he has come to this hotel where he's going to be sort of getting together with his sons, who he has not seen for a long time. They are grown up, and clearly their family has been through some fracturing, and he hasn't seen them in quite a while. And they are themselves different personalities when they show up. One of them is getting divorced, although he has not yet revealed that to the father through the communications they've had. And anyway, these three men are there in the hotel, and it takes them a while before they sort of get together. There's sort of some missed signals. The poet, who is obviously older, he's an older man, and he's got these two grown sons, doesn't always keep his phone with him, and so there's some little complication about them sort of being right there in the same place but not knowing which room or which part or which place each other is in, so there's a little bit of that, and we sort of get the sense that these three characters are, you know, they're very close, they're family members, but they're also kind of distant, haven't seen each other for a while, and seem to have a little bit of symbolic difficulty in hooking up directly, although eventually they do. And the other main characters are a young woman who is just immediately in the past gone through a very painful breakup, and she is at the hotel also with a friend of hers, and they're completely separate from the poet and his sons. But they, as the movie goes along, they sort of meet each other and interact with each other. The poet, it turns out, is quite well known, and there are people in the hotel who are really quite thrilled that he is there. But he is also kind of a drinker. And so as he kind of gets more drunk, and as he gets together with his sons, and as they then separate from each other and then come back together again, at the same time, we have the kind of parallel story of this young woman with the recent painful breakup and her friend. And as they talk with each other, we kind of get some backstory there and begin to figure out what the individual stories are of these basically five major characters: the poet and his two sons, the young woman with the breakup and her friend. And again, they kind of come together and separate again as the movie goes on. Most of this takes place within the confines of the hotel itself, although some of it takes place just outside the hotel, some of it takes place sort of down the road from the hotel. So again, this is a very intimate story with a very few characters, a very few locations, and a story which is very loose and is hardly even a story story at all, but it's a movie where eventually and gradually the personalities of these five people get kind of unwound. We learn more about them, and we learn about them partly through their interactions with each other as separate storylines, and partly through their interactions among the two different storylines. So I gotta stress again what a quiet, intimate, small-scale movie this is. But if you can sort of sit back and get involved with the performances, which are all absolutely excellent, and enjoy the process of getting to know these five people and sort of wonder where these relationships are going to go and how they're going to intersect and whether they're going to blossom into something more, it can really be quite an engrossing experience. So again, Hotel by the River is no masterpiece, but I found it just enjoyable to watch. One of those movies that kind of takes you in and brings you on a brief journey and then kind of lets you go without any big thundering climax. And at the end, you feel you've really gotten to know some people in a world very different from the one I inhabit, but a world that I can certainly recognize and feel emotionally connected to. So quite a wonderful movie, the kind of thing that Hong Sang-soo does very well. Our next movie now comes from Hungary. And it is by a Hungarian filmmaker named Milorad Krstic. And it is called Ruben Brandt Collector. And it is, in fact, about a collector. And this is an animation, I must say, right at the get-go, because that's very, very important to the nature of this movie. And it is not one of these animations that we so often get from Hollywood that tries to be real realistic, even when they're about superheroes and stuff like that. They give us all kinds of incredibly detailed stuff that makes us feel we're seeing a very coherent world. Ruben Brandt Collector is actually more of a surrealistic kind of experience, and it's really not interested in the kind of realism that modern-day animation can give us, and even old-fashioned animation can give us. It wants to be dreamlike, almost psychedelic, fantastical, and it is definitely those things. So it is also a movie that has, I said it was kind of surrealistic, and surrealism is, of course, the form of art that draws directly on the world of dreams for material and inspiration, and surrealism is allied in that way with psychoanalysis, which is very interested in the world of dreams and in the interpretation of dreams. And the main character of Ruben Brandt Collector, Ruben Grant, that is to say, is in fact a psychoanalyst, and he has been having his own trouble with dreams because he's been having horrible nightmares, and his nightmares seem to be inhabited by the works of art, which he loves. Yeah, he is an art connoisseur, and he feels he's got to get to the root of these nightmares. He's got to do something about them. They're disrupting his life. They're making it impossible for him to feel any peace in his own psyche, and so he has some patients who happen to be very good at stealing things. And the scheme emerges that they will get a hold of these artworks that have been sort of inspiring and inhabiting his nightmares. And then once he believes that he actually has control over these paintings, that they are within his possession, perhaps this will enable him to now tamp down the nightmares which are disturbing his life so much. So he becomes the kind of ringleader of this little ring of art thieves, and he becomes known as the collector. He is a collector, but he's a thief kind of collector, and this, of course, leads to all kind of intrigue. Now, the thing about Ruben Brandt Collector, as this little synopsis which I've just given may sort of indicate, is that it is not only very sort of, it passes between reality and illusion, which is to say we have the real-life psychoanalyst and the real-life thieves, but we also have his nightmares, his fantasies, his fears, his dreams of all different kinds and so forth. And the movie is constantly shuttling between these different things. So it's very ambitious in that sense. It operates on sort of different levels of reality and unreality. So it's a very complicated movie in that sense, but it doesn't seem to me to want to make exactly very clear, coherent sense out of this shuttling back and forth. It's more about putting on a wild, spectacular extravaganza of a meeting, of a movie. And the reviews that the movie has been receiving, the ones that admire the movie, seem to just find it explosively cinematic and marvelously audiovisual experience with all this fantabulous stuff going on, popping between reality and unreality. I found the whole thing wearying, tiring, and pretentious. I really got tired of it very, very early on. I'm all for an animation that does its very best to put on a spectacular show. But to tell you the truth, I enjoy that kind of a show more when it's related to some sort of a coherent narrative, even if it's a sort of an ordinary narrative, like you get, for example, in the Spider-Man movie Into the Spider-Verse that we had recently, or even The Incredibles. Here we have a movie which just seems to be spectacular, psychedelic extravaganza for its own sake. And again, I found it very tiring, and I found the whole thing very pretentious. Its references to the art world seem to be there more to impress us than to really make an impact on us. So as much as I admire, and I have to say this flat out, I admire Milorad Krstić for making a movie which is so ambitious in its way, I just wish it were less pretentious and more coherent. I'm all for a kind of adventurous, almost avant-garde animation. Let's have more of those, but let's have them be more coherent and less kind of just laboring so hard to impress than I'm afraid Ruben Brandt Collector is. Our final movie for today is called Everybody Knows, and it is by the wonderful Iranian filmmaker Asghar Farhadi. He first kind of burst on the international scene with a terrific movie called A Separation, and a movie he made before that, which I think is even better, called About Ellie, which I think is his best movie, and also a fairly recent film called The Salesman. And Farhadi is kind of an international filmmaker in his way, even though he's very rooted in Iran. He is an Iranian filmmaker. And by the way, I have to emphasize, since there's almost always in America so much political controversy over Iran, Iran has one of the most humane and marvelous film industries in the world and has produced so many masterpieces over recent decades that they can hardly be counted. And Farhadi is one of the very best Iranian filmmakers. But as I say, he's got kind of an international approach in certain ways to his respect. His recent movie, The Past, which came out about half dozen years ago, takes place very much in France. His movie before this, The Salesman, just about 3 years ago, has large scenes in it when the American play Death of a Salesman is enacted as part of the plot of The Salesman. It's an Iranian theatrical production, but it's an American play that is excerpted very strongly in The Salesman. And now Everybody Knows is a movie which really is completely in the Spanish language and is very much has a Spanish cast. Javier Bardem and Penelope Cruz are the stars of it, and it takes place in a Spanish village where the two of them grew up. So what the story is basically here is that we have these main characters whose names are Paco and Laura, played by the wonderful Javier Bardem and the wonderful Penelope Cruz. And many, many years ago in their Spanish village, they were in love. Laura, the Penelope Cruz character, grew up, got married, moved far away to Buenos Aires in South America, but she has returned to her Spanish village to attend her younger sister's wedding. Paco, in the meanwhile, has also come for the wedding, and again, these two were in love a long time ago, and the whole family which is there for the wedding is watching those two. Here are these two who have been in love, and now they've been living on separate continents for so long, and she is married, and her husband has not come to the wedding. He's still back there in Argentina. So what's going on? What's going to happen with these two? And so that's what everybody's interested in, but then something happens which tosses the whole thing into a whole other register, which is that a member of the family gets kidnapped, a teenage girl gets kidnapped. And the next thing you know, we're in the middle of a kidnapping story with ransom notes and great mysteries about who has done the kidnapping. What do they really want? Why did they kidnap this particular person? Could it have something to do for personal reasons as well as simply a desire to collect some ransom? And we have this kidnapping story going on at the same time we have this sort of romantic story going on. And then the husband from Buenos Aires returns, comes also to the small Spanish Georgetown, and now he's in there too, and we have rivalries between the old lover and the current husband, and there are all kinds of other characters in this too. Farhadi is a really masterful filmmaker kind of orchestrated multiple characters in multiple storylines, and here they are very coherent and they intersect with one another in very artful ways, and the performances are all superb, not only by the stars, Penelope Cruz and Javier Bardem, but by all the secondary players are quite marvelous, and there's a lot of intergenerational stuff as well, which I found beautifully done. Farhadi is a very great filmmaker, one of the greatest of all of the Iranian filmmakers. I find his movies uneven, not all are equally great. I don't think this one quite rises to the level of A Separation or About Ellie, but it's a marvelous movie. Some critics are saying it's not up to Farhadi's best work. I think it's almost there. And certainly anybody who is interested in a movie which is once a very compelling family drama and a very subtly wrought one, and also a very suspenseful kidnapping story where you really don't know what's going to happen, and where all kinds of secrets and lies are coming out over the course of the whole movie as the kind of love story elements and the family drama elements and the kidnapping story elements all kind of intermingle with each other. At one point, I thought this movie could have the title of that marvelous Mike Lee movie of many years ago, Secrets and Lies, because it's very much about that. But it's a very engaging movie, a very suspenseful movie, and I found it quite compelling from beginning to end. So Everybody Knows is a movie that everybody could see. Everybody should see. And that is my story this week, Jill.
And a good one it is. Thank you very much, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Hotel by the River, Reuben Brandt's Collector, and Everybody Knows.